Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur will begin from the very end of Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis. Before we learn the Gemara, we will encounter a geometric form, one of our series markings, in this case a house, and this is explained in the outside margin there at the bottom of Samach Aleph Omid Beis. You notice we have in the outside margin written Nosei Mivne, that the Nosei is a topic heading, Mivne is a structural note. Sometimes these notes appear as separate topics, as separate features, and sometimes they are combined. In this case, we've combined the Nosei, the topic, with the structural note. The house form, as you can see, features a machlokes Rav Nachman and the Amemar. Hence, Rav Nachman appears in a house form as well as Amemar, almost halfway down Samach Beis Amud Beis. Ma tzrichim ledas lifnei shesoimchen al simen echad ba'oifos. How much must one know concerning birds before one can rely on the presence of one of the signs of kashrus when it comes to birds? In our previous shiur, we mentioned there are 4 signs of kashrus that if any one of them appears on a bird, then one can eat it. Now, the Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman. Hoya boki bohen uvushmoisehen. If a person is familiar with the Peris and Ozmiya, these are names of 2 birds, and he can say, he can identify a bird as being a Peris or as an Osnia, and hence any other bird that happens to also have one sign, just like the Peris and Osnia have, it ought to be pointed out that the Peris and Osnia, as we learned in our previous shiur, are examples, or are the 2 cases of the Torah where a bird has one sign of kashrus and it's not kosher. In other words, it's called Xeris HaKosov. It's a Torah ruling that these 2 birds, Peris and Osnia, are, we'll say, exceptions to the rule. The rule being that if a bird has one sign of kashrus, you can go ahead and eat it. Now, Rav Nachman is adding, this is true provided you can identify a Peris and Osnia. Hence, if you come across a bird that has one sign of kashrus, and you know that it's not a Peris nor an Osnia, go ahead and eat it. So Rav Nachman is telling us, in order to rely on that one sign of kashrus, you have to be able to identify a Peris and Osnia. Oif habo besimen echod tohor. So Rav Nachman is saying, if you know what a Peris and Osnia are, and you can identify them by name, then if you see another bird that's not a Peris nor an Osnia, that has one sign of kashrus, tohor means it is acceptable, you can eat it. Lo hoya boki bohen uvishmosehen. If you are not an expert in identifying a Peris and Osnia by name, then besimen echad tameh, you cannot rely on a bird having one simen of kashrus, because, well, it might be a Peris or it might be an Osnia, which are forbidden birds. However, b'shnei simonim tohor, if you see a bird that has 2 signs of kashrus, and specifically 2, not 3, not 1, but 2 signs of kashrus, you can go ahead and eat it, v'hu shiakir oirev, provided you can recognize what an orev is. An orev is the sole example of a bird that has 2 signs of kashrus, 2 meaning to the exclusion of 3 and 1. It has only 2 signs of kashrus, and it's forbidden. That's a Torah ruling. However, any other bird that has 2 signs of kashrus, if it's not an orev, it's acceptable. So we are telling you that if you see a bird that has 2 signs of kashrus, and you recognize what an orev is, and this bird that you will come across is not an orev, you can go ahead and eat it. The Gemara now has a question, and you can see it's a long question, hence we have a long question marking that accompanies this. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line indicating the length of the question. The question essentially takes in, is made up primarily of a Tanaic source that challenges what we just learned. The Tanaic source, you can see, is featured in a frame indicating that it's a Tanaic source, and we frame off in our Gemara marking system the Tanaic sources with frames so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara text. So the Gemara asks, Orev Vesulo, are you saying that the Orev is the only bird that has two signs of kashrus and is not acceptable, and there are no others? V'hatanya. We have the following Tanaic source, and we're going to be emphasizing as we go along in this source the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. So the source says, Orev. Orev, in this case, is really a quote from the Pasuk, which mentions the Orev as being a forbidden bird. Ze Orev. So it says the Orev, that's a reference to the Orev itself. The Pasuk also uses the word limino, hence you see quotation marks around these expressions, as they are direct quotes from the Pasuk, and it says, Orev limino, Rabbi Elazar Omer, lohavi es hazarzir. The fact that the Torah says Orev limino is coming to include the zarzir bird. Omer lo l'Rabbi Elazar. There are those that said to Rabbi Elazar, v'halo anshe kfar tamrosa sheb Yehuda hoyu ochlim osan. It was reported to Rabbi Eliezer that the people of Kfar Tamrosa, that's the name of a place, Sheb Yehuda, in the Yehuda region of Israel, ate zarzir birds. Why? Because they had a zephik. Now, the zephik is one of the four signs of kashrus, and Rashi adds, it happens to be one of the signs that is not present in an orev. The zephik is one of the organs of digestion characteristic of birds, certain birds. So we see from here that how can you, Rebbe Elazar, say that limino includes the zarzir when the people of Kfar Tamrosa ate it based on it having a zephik? And as we said, according to Rashi, the zephik is something that's not characteristic of an orev. Amar lahen, so Rabbi Elazar responded. He said, Afhein asirin litenas adin. They will have to pay, so to speak. They will have to give judgment for what they've done. In other words, according to Rabbi Elazar, they should not eat the zarzir. Now, why not? According to Rabbi Elazar, Rashi explains that since the zarzir bird is common in keeping company with the orvim, in other words, if you have a flock of orvim, you will find zarzirs amongst them. Therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar, that's an indication that the zarzir is a type of orev. Dover acher, lemino, another approach to the lemino word. Lahavi sinunis levona, divrei Rabbi Elazar. The Torah is including, along with the orev, the sinunis levona type bird as being forbidden. Omru lo. It was told to Rebbe Elazar, "Valo anshe golil ho'elyoin oichlim oisoi mitnei shikur kuvonoi niklaf." It was reported that the people of the Upper Galilee region eat the snunis levona kind of bird because it has one of the signs of kashrus, namely, it has the peelable kurkavon. Kurkavon is one of the organs of digestion, which we've learned about in previous Gemaras. And it's one of the four signs of kashrus, and hence they relied on the fact that it had a kurkavon that was niklaf, a kurkavon that was peelable. Omar lohem, Rabbi Elazar responded to them and said, Af hein asidin litain esadin. They are going to have to bear judgment for having eaten the snunis levona, because as far as I am concerned, says Rabbi Elazar, the snunis levona is a type of orev. So what do we see from this? We see, through the eyes of Rabbi Elazar, that the orev is not the only bird that we would say is forbidden based on it having two signs of kashrus. There are others that are included under the heading Orev. Ela, so the Gemara refines what we said above, Ela Orev, v'chol min Orev. We are going to, we'll repeat the basic law now in its final form, and that is that if you see a bird that has two signs of kashrus, and you can identify an Orev and those birds that are categories or subcategories of Orev, and you know that this bird in question is not one of those, then you can go ahead and eat it based on the fact that it has two signs of kashrus. And of course, we're talking about someone who does not know who cannot identify a peres, nur, and osnia bird. Because, just to review, if one is capable of identifying a peres and osnia by name, and he comes across a bird that has one sign of kashrus, and knows it's not one of them, he would be able to eat it. Omar Amemar. We notice Amemar has a house form around him. This connects him to Rav Nachman in terms of the general topic, but we pointed out earlier in our introduction that Amemar disagrees with Rav Nachman, and let's see now what Amemar says. Hilchasa oif habo besimen echot tohor. A bird that has one sign of kashrus is acceptable, you can eat it, and here's the main point, and Rashi adds this, and he says you can rely on the one sign of kashrus, even if you are not expert in the peres and osnia. V'hu delo doris, this is provided that it does not doris, it doesn't do this doris action when eating. And just to review that which we've learned in the past, a doris action is where a bird holds down its food with its leg and picks up the what it's eating while with its beak while holding down the food item that it's consuming. So you can rely on one siman of kashrus provided the bird does not behave in this doris form when eating. Omale Rav Ashi Lamemar. Rav Nachman Mai. So Rav Ashi asks, remember, what about Rav Nachman? Rav Nachman said that you can't rely on one simon of kashrus unless you are expert in identifying peres and osnia. Omar Lei, so Amemar responds, Lo Shmiali, I don't hear it. Klomar Lo Svirali, I don't hold from Rav Nachman's stringency. Now, here the Gemara explains why. My eco, what could there possibly be? Mishum peres v'osnia. If you see a bird with one sign of kashrus on it, what might you suspect? If you might suspect it's a peres and osnia. No, less nehu beyishuv. Peres and osnia are birds that live in the wild. They don't live in settled communities. So that if you're in a settled area, and you chance upon a bird that has one sign of kashrus, you can rely on it, and you don't have to consider or worry that maybe it's a peres nor osnia. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nosei, and on the let's read what we've written on the outside margin. Shnei l'shoynois b'ti'ur snunis levona shecholku bo rebelozer v'chachamim. We will see two versions in the upcoming Gemara of the Machlokes Reb Elozer and the Chachamim that we saw featured in the Tanaic source above concerning the Snunis Levona. Let us now go on in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Oif HaMesoreit, a bird that scratches, Kosher L'Taras Mitzora. A mitzora is someone who experiences a skin discoloration, and as a result of which, if a kohen rules on it being a sign of tumah, so the individual becomes a mitzora, a formal mitzora, and is tame. As part of extricating oneself from that state, when the sign of discoloration disappears, he brings two birds as part of a, we'll call it a purification ceremony, and he brings these two birds a week before he actually brings formal sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. These birds, in the singular, are referred to as tzipor, or tziporim in the plural. They are not sacrifices, And for our purposes, we don't have to delve into the details and exactly what was done with these birds, but suffice it to say that a bird or two birds are needed for the Taras HaMetzora. So Rav Yehuda says that if you chance upon a bird that is Mesoreit, scratches, it is the Tzipor. It's the Tzipor that the Torah refers to. Vezuhi Snunis Levona Shenechliku Ba Rabbi Lezer V'Chachomim. And the bird that fits this bill happens to be the Snunis Levona, concerning which we saw a machlokis between Rabbi Lezer and Chachomim. Now, take advantage of the little arrow that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you skim up the page to find a parallel arrow, you will notice it's pointing to a line which had the expression Levona, or Snunis Levona, was mentioned there, and we had featured Rabbi Lezer, and there were those that disagreed with him. You can see that all above. So the Rav Yehuda, or I should say the Gemara, is saying that the Ov HaMesoreit, which is kosher for Taras HaMetzora. Now, we're not talking about eating. We're talking about what is fit for the Taras HaMetzora. So, for that procedure. And that procedure does not involve slaughtering and eating the bird. So, a Snunis Levona is the example of the Ov HaMesoreit that would be acceptable for the Taras HaMetzora. We should point out that a pasuk found in the Torah alludes to these birds in Vayikra, Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Dalid. And the pasuk says, V'tzibo ha-koyen v'lokach la-mitaher shtei tziporim chayois tahoyrois, etc. The pasuk makes reference to two tziporim that are chayos tahoros. Tahoros would imply or convey that these are kosher variety birds. So far we have seen that Rabbi Yehuda points out that the scratching type bird, a bird that scratches, is acceptable for Taras HaMetzora, and that's the Snunis Levona that there was mentioned above as a Machlokis, Rabbi Lezer and the Chachomim. We're going to have to qualify this and be very careful. After all, the Torah says it's Tziporos Tahoros, kosher variety birds, so how can you say that Rabbi Lezer would discount it, not accept it for as kosher, if you're telling me that it's acceptable for Taras HaMetzora when the Pasuk itself says for Taras HaMetzora you need a kosher variety bird? So this will become clear as we go on in the Gemara. We pointed out before in our introduction that we're going to see two Lishonos concerning the Machlokis, Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim. These are indicated by the Roman numeral number 1 that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and a few lines later, you see a Roman numeral number 2, the line on which you see the expression Masni Hochi, which is a squiggle underline. In our markings, we will use a squiggle underline in addition to standard emphasis, also to indicate a change or a suggested additional version of whatever. So we now turn to the Gemara and read Omar Amemar Bechivra Karsa Kule Alma Lo Pligi Desharya. If the Snunis bird has a white belly, everyone agrees that it is acceptable. It's kosher. Ki Pligi, the Machlokis, Rabbi Lezer and the Chachomim, concerns Bediruka Karsa. Yeruka or Yorok is a color that's, of course, not white. And sometimes it's translated as a yellowish color, but for our purposes we can simply refer to it as yorok. So if it has a belly that's colored yorok, Rebbe Lezer osar v'harbonon sharo. When we saw above in the Tanaic source there was a controversy surrounding the Snunis Levona, it was a yorok colored belly bird. V'hilchasa k'Rebbe Lezer. The Gemara rules that we will follow Rebbe Lezer concerning the yorok-colored bellied bird and not allow it to be eaten. Marzutra Masni Hochi. Marzutra has the following version of Amemar. This is a more, we'll call it restrictive version, as will become apparent immediately. B'diruka karsa kuli alma lo pligi de osir. Notice with the dashed underlines how you're able to compare these two lashonos. In the first lashon, we had a situation where everyone is in agreement of something being allowed. That was in the white-bellied snunis. In this version, you have a situation where everyone is in agreement something is forbidden. By the way, in the first version, there was no unanimity concerning something prohibited. But this version, as we said, is a stricter approach, says that with regard to the Yeruka Karsa, everyone agrees that it is forbidden. Ki pligi b'dechivra karsa. The machlokis, Reb Elozer, and the Chachamim that we saw featured above in the Tanaic source regarded a white-bellied snunis. Reb Elozer osar. Reb Elozer forbids even that one. Rabbonon shoru. And the Rabbonon allow that. V'hilchasa k'rabbonon d'shoru. And the halacha will follow the Rabbonon that allow the white-bellied snunis. It would come out, according to both of these pieces of Gemara, with regard to the rulings, the Hilchasa, it would come out that the Snunis Lavona, the Snunis with the white belly, as far as the Psak of the Gemara is concerned, is allowed. Because in the first version, we paskin like Reb Elozer L'chumra, but his Chumra was manifest only with regard to the Yeruka. With regard to the Chivra, or the white-bellied one, everyone agreed is allowed. According to the second version, we have the Gemara ruling like the Rabbanan. The result of that is that the white-bellied is certainly going, the white-bellied one will be allowed. The Gemara continues operating within these two versions. Bishlamo lamandomar b'chivro karsa pligi. According to the approach that was the Roman numeral number 2, that with regard to the white-bellied snunis, there was a controversy. Hainu dikotoni, I understand in the original brisa where the machlokis appeared, it said snunis levona. Well, in that source, you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a little star appears. This will help you refer back to where it was originally mentioned. It was mentioned that the controversy surrounded Snunis Lavona. Where did we see in these two versions, the Roman numerals 1 and 2, where did we see that Snunis Lavona was a machlokes? That was in the second version. Ela lamando amar b'diruga pligi, but the Lavona, everyone would agree, is mutter, namely according to the first version, that the machlokis concerning the yeruka, the yorok colored belly, my snunis lavona. Lavona means white. Why does the source feature that the controversy was concerning the white bellied snunis when, according to this particular version, the first version, the machlokis surrounded the yorok colored belly? The Gemara answers that when the source features the word lavona and says the controversy concerns Lavona doesn't mean white. The word Lavona, which usually means white, simply is a word used la'afuke deboti de'uchmesi. This is to the exclusion of the snunis of boti. These are snunis birds that grow or that live in walls of houses, and they happen to be black colored. Therefore, the brisa, when it refers to a snunis lavona and that there is a controversy around it, so we're trying to say the controversy concerns a lighter colored bird, lighter than black, and to indicate that lighter color, which happens to be yeruka according to this version, the Roman numeral number 1 version, it uses the word lavona simply to indicate a lighter color, and we are referring to yeruka to the exclusion of the black-colored one, which is not the subject of the controversy above. And before going ahead in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and actually we should just not go too much further and point out that we've included a little chart on the inside margin of the Gemara in order to see these two lashonos and in a chart form. So you can see we have two columns, one called Chivra and the other one called Yeruka. We have Amemar and labeled as number Roman numeral number 1, that was the first version, and then the Marzutra version of Amemar, labeled as Roman numeral number 2, and we filled in the appropriate boxes with the ruling concerning each one of those birds. The Gemara, as we continue, we mentioned that we have a new topic heading in the outside margin, and you can see it in the outside margin, the Nosei, and in parentheses we've indicated Ad Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. That means that the upcoming Gemara will take us for quite a way up till that daf, the next daf. Shemos Shel Oifos Hayeduim La Gemara. The Gemara will report different names of birds, names that were familiar to the Gemara. Ukviosam Kiksherim O Asurim. And the role of the Gemara will be to establish whether these known birds are kosher or of an unkosher variety. So now we continue with the Gemara. Amar Rachba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Tosil. Tosil is a type of yoina. Posil mishum turin v'kosher mishum b'nei yona. And this Gemara happens to be very very obscure if we don't add a certain amount of background to it. This particular reference is not a kashrus reference, but rather it's referring to it in the context of sacrifices. The Torah, and we saw this in the previous daf, we saw that the Torah mentions the kinds of birds that are allowed to be brought as sacrifices, and they happen to be the Torin or Bnei Yona, two different kinds of birds. Once again, Torin and Bnei Yona. It just so happens, and we've learned this on previous occasions, that the Torin bird is acceptable provided it's reached a certain level of maturity. In other words, the young version of a Torin is not acceptable as a sacrifice. The opposite is true with regard to the Bnei Yona. The Bnei Yona type bird is acceptable provided it doesn't reach a certain level of maturity. In other words, the Bnei Yona, and its name indicates that Bnei, a child, a son, meaning something young. So Bnei Yona is acceptable as a bird provided it's still in its youthful state and has not reached the level of maturity that is delineated in other Mishnayos. So the Tosil, this bird that we just referred to, the Tosil, we're categorizing it as a type of Yoina. Therefore, we tell you Posil Mishum Torin. That means that if it reaches a certain level, once it reaches a certain level of maturity, it won't be acceptable. The kosher mishum b'nei yona means that if it's young, it will be kosher just like the b'nei yona are kosher when they are young. Now another name of bird, de'atzifi. This is a type of torin bird. V'torin shel rachba, another kind of bird. Once again, atzifi, v'torin shel rachba. Two kinds of birds. Ksherin mishum torin. These birds are acceptable provided they've reached the necessary level of maturity that's required for a torin. Upsulin mishum veneyona. If you bring the atzifi or torin sharachba birds when they are young, they will not be acceptable. Mosiv Rav Daniel bar Rav Katina. An objection is raised based on the following Tanaic source. Kol ha'oifos poslin mei chatos. All kinds of birds will disqualify water drawn for the purpose of mixing it with ashes of the poraduma, which is designated for purification of someone who was exposed to tuma as a result of involvement with the dead, tumas meis. In order for someone to become tohor, purify himself from tumas meis, he has to have a mixture of live spring water mixed with red heifer ash sprinkled on him. There are rules and regulations regarding the mei chatos. One of these rules is that the mei chatos, the water for the chatos, for the mixing of ashes of the paraduma, that water shall not have been used for any other malacha. Included in this realm is a case where, a creature would drink from the water, and while it's drinking, water will dribble back into the container that contains the water. The dribbling back of the water from the creature that's drinking it, that will ruin the water. So when birds drink, in general, when they drink in such a way that they may scoop up some water in their beak, and it then dribbles back down while they are drinking. So this source tells us that all birds, if they were to drink from the mei chatos, they will ruin it. Chutz min hayoina, with the exception of the yona, b'nei shem motzetzes. The style of drinking of the yona is one of, we'll call it a sucking action, where it simply sucks up the water without any water dribbling back into the receptacle holding it. So that if you have mei chatos water, water you designated for the paraduma ash, and you see a yona bird drinking from it, have no fear, the water is still kosher. It's still kosher, meaning it's still acceptable. Now, we said a moment before that the tosil was a type of yona. And that was indicated by the Gemara on Omid Aleph, four lines from the bottom, where it said on Omid Aleph, tosil is posul mishum turim v'kosher mishum v'nei yona, indicating that the tosil is a type of yona. So the Gemara now says, v'im isa, if it were so that the tosil is a type of yona, listening, then this source should have said, chutz mi yona v'tosil, that all birds ruin mei chatos except for the yona and tosil. The Gemara answers that really these are two separate topics. As far as categorizing a bird, the tosil is categorized as a yona. However, the tosil specifically, if its style of drinking is different than that of the yona. So that we can call them maybe their first cousins in sort of categorizing creatures. However, as far as mei chatos is concerned, they don't have identical drinking styles. The Omar Rabbi Zera, ze moitzeitz umeki, the tosil will suck up, but it also spits back that which it drinks. Ze moitzeitz v'eino meki. The standard yona sucks up without anything dribbling back. Before going further in the Gemara, let us take advantage of our Mivneh structural note that explains the new geometric form that we are about to encounter, the diamond. Our note says in the outside margin, under the Mivneh heading, the diamond is featured, Meimros Shirav Yehuda, Be'inyon Kashrus Baalei Chayim. Different comments, we'll have a series of comments of Reb Yehuda regarding the Kashrus, the acceptability of different creatures. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rav Yehuda, Hani Kufshani Tzutzaini. The word Kufshani, Rashi explains, is Torin in Aramaic. So Kufshani Tzutzaini, Tzutzaini is a reference to a place. So the Torim of Tzutzaini are Ksherim Legabi Mizbeach. Those birds would be acceptable if brought as bird sacrifices. The Hein Torin Sharachba. They happen to be the Torin Sharachba, which was referred to on Omid Aleph. We have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph. And if you look back on Omid Aleph, you will find a corresponding star, which it says there, Omid Beis. The Gemara asks, is this really so that they're acceptable as sacrifices? We're going to bring a source in, even though the source is not directly related to the topic of bird sacrifices. Nevertheless, the source tells us regarding one of the requirements for Tahara is the use of an azov. The azov is a a branch from a certain kind of plant, the azov plant. And when the Torah says, bring an azov for this particular purification process, the Torah is telling me, bring an azov, and not something that's, we'll call, something that's called azov with a compound name. Mesve, the Gemara asks, azov velo azov yavon. The Torah wants me to bring an azov for this purification process, but not a yavon azov, velo azov kuchli, velo azov romi, velo midbori, velo kol azov, sheyesh lo shem levai. Don't bring any kind of azov that happens to have an accompanying expression along with it, shem levai, an accompanying expression. So with this in mind, how can you tell me when the Torah says that Torin are acceptable as sacrifices, am I not to understand that Torin is to the exclusion of something that's called, let's say, Torin Shel Rachba, or Kufshani Tzutzaini, the Tzutzaini birds, the Torin of Tzutzaini? Just like we said here by the Azov, bring an Azov, but not an Azov Yavon. Yavon has to do with the Greeks. So bring an Azov and not a Greek Azov. So by the same token, should I not say bring Torin and not Torin of Tzutzaini? Omar Abaye explains that the case of the Torin, the Kufshani Tzutzaini, is different. Kol shenishtane shmoi koide matan Torah. If you had items that had different kinds of names before the giving of the Torah, v'hikpido Torah olav, and the Torah came along and used only one expression to instruct me what to do, then we say yesh lo shem levai posel. The item that has any other name, any other accompanying name, would be unacceptable. So in the case of the Azov, one can assume that these terms, Azov Yavon, Azov Kuchli, these are ancient expressions that existed even before the giving of the Torah. The Torah says, bring an Azov. It doesn't say, bring Azov Yavon, etc. So the Torah has an agenda. It's trying to exclude all those other Azov-related plants because they have names other than simple Azov. However, with regard to the birds, the honey, in the case of the Torin, loy nishtanu shmon koidem matan Torah. Before the giving of the Torah, Torin were referred to only as Torin. So when the Torah said bring Torin, it didn't have as part of its agenda to exclude anything else because there was nothing else to exclude. There were no other expressions related to similar birds. Therefore, even though accompanying expressions arose later referring to different varieties of Torin, once we know they're categorized as a type of Torin, we're not going to exclude them. Hence, these different types of Torin, these different varieties of Torin, are acceptable as sacrifices. Rava Omar. Rava has another approach. He says that the case of the Kufshani Tzutzaini is not even a case of a Torin with an accompanying name. Be'asrayu, Asrayu means in their place. In other words, if you were in Tzutzin, Stamo Korilu, in the town of Tzutzin, they are referred to as simple Torin. So that according to Rava, even if you had before Matan Torah, the Torin were referred to as Kufshani Tzutzaini, the Torah is not excluding them because in Tzutzin they are referred to as simply Torin, which is what the Torah tells me to bring. So we see that the compound expression there was simply a locational consideration and not part of its name. Omar Rav Yehuda, Hani Karzi Debe Shilfi Shoro Udebe Karbi Asiri. Karzi is in the realm of locusts. So the locusts of Bei Chilfi are acceptable. The locusts of Bei Karbi are unacceptable. Bei Chilfi, Rashi uses a French expression And in Sforum that explained the French words, the translation given for this French word is nettles. Nettles, types of thorns. So if you have, we'll say according to the Gemara, according to Rav Yehuda, if you have locusts that develop in thorny areas, those kind of locusts are acceptable, are kosher. Don't be surprised, we've learned already in the Mishnah the signs of kashrus for chagovim, for locust-type insects. The Bay Karbi, Karbi is from the word kruv. Kruv is a type of vegetable. So that if you have locusts that grow in kruv fields, those would be forbidden. Omar Avino, Umalkinon Olaihu, one who would eat, let us say, a locust from Bay Karbi, from the kruv field, would get lashed for eating it. Mishum Sheretz Ha'oif. The Torah warns against eating flying insects. Sheretz ha'of, flying insects. What Ravina is telling us is that the prohibition of the Karzi Debei Karbi is a prohibition on a Torah level. In other words, there is no element of doubt. It's not a type of chumrah stringency of the Rabbonan. Otherwise, if it would be a simple stringency of the Rabbonan, there wouldn't necessarily be a malkos, a lashing penalty. Lashing penalty is something that figures primarily as far as one who violates a Torah restriction. The Omar Rav Yehuda. Now we'll talk about birds. Tsarda Shori, Barda Osir. These are names of birds known to the Gemara. And he tells us that Tsarda is allowed, the Barda is not. V'simonech, in order to remember which is which, remember the following expression, Bar Minei. Bar Minei is a common expression meaning something is an exception. So that, or literally Bar means outside. So that from, if you remember simply Bar Minei, if you hear Barda, you know the word Barda has Bay's Resh at the beginning of it, you know it's not acceptable, it's outside. It's outside the realm of Kashrus. Marda, another kind of bird, Sveka. We are not sure whether it's a kosher variety or not. And of course, as we just mentioned, when you're dealing with a Suffolk, so there wouldn't be a Torah legislation of penalty of lashing as a punishment, because we don't give punishments for something that's a matter of doubt. Omar Ravasi, Shmoinus Sveikos Hain. With regard to birds, there are 8 kinds of birds that we would classify as Suffolk, as doubt whether they are kosher or not. And we will list them off as we read along in the Gemara. We've also provided numbering. Chuva, Chuga, Suga, Veharnuga, Tushalmi, Umarda, Kuchilna, Ubarnafcha. 8 kinds of birds. We've dashed underlined the 6th one, the Marda, because that's why this was brought in to begin with. The Marda being a Suffolk. My Sveikayu, what's the doubt concerning these birds? In other words, we know that if a bird has a singular sign of kashrus, it's a kosher bird, provided you know that it's not a Paris nor Osniah. What could be the issue of doubt here? The Gemara explains, Oifois tahorim kurkevona niklaf. One of the signs of kashrus of a kosher variety bird is the ability to peel its kurkevon, the kurkevon being one of the organs of digestion inside a bird. Utmein ein kurkevona niklaf. With regard to an unkosher variety bird, its kurkevon is not peelable. The honey, the 8 birds we listed just above, kurkevonon niklaf besakina. If you use a knife, you will be able to peel its kurkevon. That's a quest. That, therefore, is the suffix. It's not peelable by hand. If it were, then we would know, though, we would know it to be kosher. These are peelable, but only with the use of a knife. The Gemara asks, V'ho ahi bar avzo. There was a bar avzo. Now, bar avzo, for our purposes, is a definitely kosher variety bird. Dehava bei mar Shmuel. That was in the home of Shmuel. Delo hava komiklaf kurkevone. Its kurkevon was just unpeelable, the oisvei b'shimsha, and I suppose that since they tested out the peelability of its kurkumin and found it couldn't be peeled, it raised a question in their mind regarding the kashrus of the bird. So what did they do? The oisvei b'shimsha, they put it in the sun, it heated up through the sun's rays, the kevon de rafi iklif, and when it became soft as a result of the exposure to the sun, it was then peelable. So what do we see? We see that even if something isn't immediately peelable, it's kosher. So why do you say above, with regard to those eight birds, that because their kurkuman needed a knife to enable you to peel it, that there was any problem? Gemara answers, there's a big difference between these two cases. Hossam, in the case of the bar avza, ki rafi, when it became soft, iklif biyada, it was peelable by hand. So the emphasis we're going to be placing is on how you do the peeling. Once the peeling can be done by hand, that's a sure sign of kashrus. Hacha, with regard to the sfeikos, the doubt birds that we had, afagav de rafi, even if they become soft, lo miklif ela besakina, still there, kurkuvans cannot be peeled other than with the use of a knife. So the fact that those needed a knife is what creates the element of doubt. Omar Abaye, Tarnagoylo de Agmo, this is the name of a type of bird, Tarnagoylo de Agmo, Chad Mishmoina Sveikos Hu. It is one of the eight Sveikos, Vahainu Mardoi. That was the Mardo, which you can see we have a little arrow to the immediate left hand side of Umar text. If you follow up the page, you'll find a corresponding arrow pointing to the line where Mardo was featured as one of the eight doubts. So the Abaye tells us that the bird commonly known as Tarnagula de Agma is one of those eight doubts. And it, in the list, it appeared as Mardoi. Omar of Popa. Rav Popa features two different kinds of birds. Now, as far as their names appear to be very similar. But that the fact that they have similar names is of no bearing on the actual nature of these birds. They are two different varieties of birds. And what we're trying to emphasize is found in the Tosfos that deals with Rav Popa's comment. Omar Rav Popa, Tarnegoilo de Agmo Asira, Tarnegolta de Agmo Sharia. Technically speaking, one name is feminine, the Tarnagolta is a feminine, and the Tarnagola is masculine. However, Tosfos' point is that we're not dealing with the same type of bird, simply the difference being gender, because make no sense with regard to kashrus. Kashrus never makes distinctions between masculine, male versus female. Therefore, Tosfos' conclusion is that these are just two different kinds of birds altogether, even though they happen to have similar sounding names. Now that that's been said, how are we to remember which is which, namely which is kosher and which is not? V'simonech, remember the following rule, Amoni velo Amoinis. The people, the nation of Ammon, the Torah says, are a people that we will not accept as converts into the Jewish fold. Even though almost all nations of the world, the conversion option exists, not with regard to Ammon. However, there's a very interesting distinction in the realm of Ammon with regard to conversion, and here, this might sound confusing, but here we do make a gender distinction. We're bringing this point in only to serve as a memory device, but not to create an exact parallel. In the case of the Ammon people, the Torah makes an exception or a distinction with regard to the female members of the Ammon people. The male Ammonites are forbidden, are not acceptable as converts. The female Ammonites are acceptable. And by the way, the same rule applies to the Moab people, the Moabites. And we have a very famous Moabite convert, happened to be Rus, who was a woman. So if you want to remember with regard to these Tarnagola versus Tarnagolta the Agma, the Gemara suggested memory devices V'simonech Amoni V'lo Amonis. The Amoni, the male, is forbidden, the female is allowed. Now, when we say female, as far as our analogy is concerned, what we are really referring to is the bird with the female-sounding name, namely Tarnagolta. That, you see, we've dashed, underlined the tuff in that name, just the line above. That's the bird with the female-sounding name. Let's just emphasize, though, for accuracy, when you're dealing with a Tarnagolta the Agma, there is a male Tarnagolta the Agma and a female Tarnagolta the Agma. The memory device is simply to enable you to remember that the type of bird that has a female sounding name is allowed. Just like in the case of conversion, we allow the females. Dorash Meimar, Tarnagolta the Agma, Asira, Chazua de Raska the Ochla. Vahainu Girusa. Now, we seem to have a different approach to the issue of the Tarnagolta de Agma. This is Mremar's approach, in distinction to Rav Popa's approach. Mremar tells us that the Tarnagolta de Agma is not allowed. That's why, by the way, that we have additional markings. We have a little aleph above the word Sharia, two lines above, where the word Sharia was also dot underlined, and we have a dot underlined under the word Asira, and we call it Beis. So the Meimar tells us that the Tarnagolta de Agma that Rav Papa said is okay, he says it's not okay. Why? Because Chazua de Dorsa Viochla. We saw it, de Dorsa Viochla. We may have misread that word a little bit earlier, so we're emphasizing the correct reading. We saw it, Meremar tells us that we saw it doing a drossa action in its eating. And we've mentioned that before. The drossa is the bird's holding its food down with one foot while it's eating it, while it's picking off the food with its beak. And we're told also that that's the Girusa bird. Omar Rav, Shovur Andarpita. This is the name of a bird, Shori. That is a kosher type bird. Piruz Andarpita, Osir. Similar names, compound names. The Andarpita is common in both cases. However, the Piruz Andarpita is forbidden. The Simonech, in order to remember that, remember Piruz Rishia. Rashi says that this was the name of a known evil person. So, being that Piruz was the name of a known evil person, you'll know that when you see a bird called Piruz Andarpita, that's a bad, in other words, that's a negative, an unkosher type bird. Nothing against those birds, but for our purposes, it's negative in terms of consumption. Omar Ravuna, Bunya Shari, Parva Osir. Other types of birds, one called Bunya, that's allowed, Parva is forbidden. Vesimonech, in order to remember that, remember Parva Amgusha. There was a certain sorcerer whose name was Parva. And sorcery is something the Torah prohibits. Hence, you will be able to remember that if you see a bird called Parva, it's forbidden. Omar Rav Papa, Mardoi. Now, we're dealing here with names of birds. Mardo Zogi Viochil. That's a kind of bird. Mardo Zogi Viochil. Shori. The Mardo Zogi Viochil. This is Osir. The Simonech, in order to remember the difference between the Zogid Mardo and the Zogid Mardo, remember the following. Lo sishtachave li'el acher. Now, we have to emphasize the word sogid. Sogid means bowing. The Pasuk says, thou shalt not bow to other gods. Tishtachave. So, tishtachave, sogid is essentially the Aramaic version of hashishtachavoya. And since the Torah warns against bowing to another god, I understand that the bird called Mardo sogid v'achil, sogid being bowing, is forbidden. We have a series marking the triangle, and you will see very shortly that we have a series of comments of Shmuel. It's not a very long series, just two comments of Shmuel regarding birds. Omar Shmuel, Shasya Chamra, Asira. The bird called Shasya Chamra is forbidden. The word Chamra happens to mean wine. And a memory device, V'simonech, to remember that Shasya Chamra is Osir, remember the following. Shituye Yayin Psulim Lavoda. Kohanim that drank wine prior to their service in the Beis HaMikdash, the drinking of wine renders them unfit for avoda, service in the Beis HaMikdash. V'yomar Shmuel, mazgo chamra, another expression, another name of a bird with the wine in it, mazgo chamra, asira. Bas mazgo chamra, a different kind of bird, very similar sounding name, but it's a different variety of bird. It's called Bas Mazgo Chamra Sharya. That's acceptable. The Simonech, in order to remember this distinction, remember the following saying. By the way, we've seen this earlier in this perek as well. The following saying is Yofa Koyach HaBen Mikoach HaAv. The strength of the son is greater than the father. That has legal ramifications with regard to what's taught in Maseches Shavuos. For our purposes, though, we're looking simply at the expression at a very superficial face value. It says here, Yofa Koyach HaBen. Regarding the names of these birds, Mazgo Chamra versus Bas Mazgo Chamra, Bas indicates offspring, daughter or son, and like Ben is Ben, Bas, we're looking at those terms interchangeably, so that the Bas Mazgo Chamra is better. Yofe Koach HaBen, this kind of bird is better in the sense that Sharia, it's mutter, it's allowed to be eaten, it's a kosher variety bird. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.